Welcome to What a Creep, the show with Margot Donahue and Sonia Mansfield talking about creeps from the past to the present.
This is your quick guide to the biggest creeps, jerks, assholes, and losers, the best of the worst.
From two nice ladies who want the world to be a little less creepy.
Welcome back to What a Creep. This is Margot Donahue, and my cohort in creepitude, as always, is the amazing Sonia Mansfield. Hey, Sonia.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, my friend. Are you still displaced from your home? You're still with your folks?
I am. I am still staying with my parents, y'all. So if I sound different, it's because I'm set up in my dad's gigantic, creepy trophy room. It's filled with all these dead animals looking at me while I'm recording.
You're going to have to post a picture on our Instagram for that.
I most certainly will. I think I posted some in my Instagram. So if you want to go to the Sonia Show on Instagram, you can see some. But it's something. I'll just say that. My dad's so proud of his vegan daughter. So hopefully I sound okay, though.
You sound great, actually.
Okay.
And I'm super excited about this episode because we are talking about another mystery. It's a mystery episode. We're not quite sure who the creep is, but maybe someone out there will figure it out for us, which is totally exciting.
I would love it if somebody, one of our listeners, solved a crime.
Anyway, we are the show that talks about creeps from the past to the present. You can follow us on social media at What a Creep. We do have a basic Facebook page. We rarely visit it. It's usually just a place where people go to tell us that we're using bad language and they wish we wouldn't. By the way,
too bad.
We use salty language in this program, so just kind of prep yourselves for that. We're on Twitter at CreepPod because somebody had What a Creep for 10 years and never used it.
Creep.
We are also on Instagram, and you guys have been really following us on Instagram. We totally love that and totally appreciate that. So thank you. We also have just a basic old-timey email, I call it. It's whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. Great place for people to send us suggestions for creeps and also non-creeps. We're always looking for suggestions for both. Also, if you just have any feedback for us, or if you would like some stickers, we do
have
stickers, and they're adorable. And
everybody drink.
That's from our Dorking Out show. We'll talk about that at the end. But if you would like some stickers, don't be shy. Ask, and we're happy to send them out to you. It's a way to support the show. Another way to support the show. Do you like that segue?
I do.
It's our Patreon page. We put out bonus episodes about twice a month.
And they're so fun.
And they are so fun. Sonia and I just kind of have a drink. We shoot the shit. We talk about creeps in the news and non-creeps in the news. Sometimes we give more information from current episodes. Sometimes we just talk about things like wouldn't make a full episode, but they're fun to talk about for like 15, 20 minutes. Please, if you're interested, we have some affordable options there. And I just want to say thank you to Carrie, Moni, Devin, Stephanie, Cyril, and Kelly. I hope I pronounced all those names correctly. Thank you all for joining the Patreon page.
Yeah, thank you. That's awesome.
And I'd like to thank some people who left us 5-star reviews in iTunes, MPR921, LRager7.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And Sean Runs.
Thank you. That really helps us find our people in Apple Podcasts. And we know that they don't make it easy for you to do that, mm-hmm. but it does really help, and it offsets all the reviews we get. We go that say like 1-star, there are a couple of Karens who drink Chardonnay, and we don't drink Chardonnay because Margot thinks it tastes like gasoline.
That's true. That me.
We also have a website at whatacreeppodcast.com, and you can find out everything you ever wanted to know about the show, but were afraid to ask. It's got all of our old episodes and a link to our merch shop that has masks and t-shirts and journals, and you could get throw pillows if you want, tote bags. It's awesome.
It's wicked awesome. And thank you, Sonia, for keeping that going. We love our threadless connection.
We absolutely do. Those masks are great.
I wear mine all the time everywhere I go, and I get compliments on them.
Oh, good.
All right. So are we ready to talk about today's show?
Yes. It's a mystery.
Ooh, go.
A very special What a Creep mystery. Sources for this episode: New York Times, CNN's Something's Killing Me. It's hosted by B.D. Wong. It's a show. ThoughtCo, A&E, PBS, ABC News, Time, and of course, Wikipedia. Always Wikipedia. And we're going to be talking about the Tylenol murders. So now everything has a safety seal on it. Everything. So like medicine, food, drink, shampoo, conditioner, everything has a safety seal. But that used to not be a thing. Then something happened in 1982 that changed everything. In September 1982, some fucking creep put cyanide inside Tylenol caplets, put them back in the bottles, and randomly placed them back on store shelves across the Chicago area. And 7 people died after taking Tylenol. And that included a 12-year-old girl, a brand new mom, and this is the one I did not remember, 3 members of the same family.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And the police set up like a special task force to investigate. And they had several suspects that they questioned throughout the years, but no one has been arrested. Therefore, it's a mystery.
It's unsolved.
The crime had everyone in this country absolutely terrified. It led to these really big changes in how items are packaged. That's why you see like tamper-proof seals on like every medicine bottle and food product, multiple layers. And they actually even changed like how medicine is made. Like it used to be these capsules that you could even break in half. Medicine would bill everywhere. They don't even do that anymore. It's like these unbreakable caplets or whatever you'd be able to tell if it had been messed with. Anyway, let's start with this What a Creep mystery at the beginning. Ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay. I guess I didn't write down trigger warnings, but I guess trigger warnings would be death.
Poisoning.
There's a lot of death. Yeah, poisoning and death. And if you don't like to take pills, maybe that would be a trigger warning for you too. Okay. In the Chicago area on September 29th, 1982, 7th grader Mary Kellerman, she was 12 years old. She stayed home from school because she was feeling sick. She had a cold. She took a Tylenol because she had her parents told her, take a Tylenol, go back to bed. She had a sore throat. She took it and she immediately like collapsed on the floor in the bathroom. And she died instantly. That same day, a postal worker, he's 27, named Adam Janis of Arlington Heights, he died what was initially thought to be a massive heart attack.
27?
27. Holy and they thought shit. It was a heart attack. So he dies. His family all comes to his house to start comforting his family. And his brother and his sister-in-law, so Stanley, 25, and Teresa, 19, they rush to the home to console the loved ones. They both got headaches. By the way, it's super common when you're all kinds of fucked up emotional shit's going on in your life. You get a big headache, right? Mm-hmm. They each took a Tylenol from the same bottle. Stanley clutched his chest and started foaming at the mouth and fell over. He died that very day. And then Teresa died 2 days later.
Oh my God.
3 people. I read an interview with this woman, Monica Janis, who was there. She was 10 years old when this happened. And those were her aunts and uncles. I'm sorry, her aunt and her uncles. To this day, she will not take Tylenol.
Well, makes would sense. You?
No, never.
Right.
And she has this overwhelming fear, this anxiety that she's had to battle her whole life now that her family members will just drop dead. The interview is so sad. I felt so bad for her. So over the next few days, there were 3 more deaths. There was 35-year-old Mary McFarland. She lived in Elmhurst. This is all in Chicago area. 35-year-old Paula Prince. And then 27-year-old Mary Reiner of Winfield. And she had just come home after giving birth to her 4th child.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And all of them, it turned out, had taken Tylenol and then keeled over. All the Tylenol was bought from different stores, by the way. They didn't all just go to the local Walgreens or whatever. They figured out it was the Tylenol pretty fast, but it wasn't the police that figured it out. It was actually a nurse at the hospital in Arlington Heights. Her name was Helen Jansen. She was the first to identify that Tylenol was the culprit. All of the Janis family was brought in. So first it was, you know, the first gentleman, Adam. And then when the other 2 came in, she was like, all the same family. She figured it out. It was the Tylenol. So then the cops went and found the bottle of Tylenol and they smelled it. It turns out cyanide smells kind of like almonds.
Oh, really?
Did you know that? Yeah. And they were like, holy shit. And they did a test and that's how they figured it out. So shout out to Helen Janssen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For our nurses.
Yeah.
Frontline workers.
Yeah, they figured it out. So I wanted to tell y'all what happens when you take cyanide. Cyanide basically prevents your cells from getting oxygen. Immediate symptoms are like headaches and dizziness, weakness and fatigue, lack of coordination. And those could be attributed to a lot of other things. So you may not even know that you've taken something that like cyanide. But then if you took like a larger dose, you go unconscious, there's convulsions, lung damage, respiratory failure, you could go into a coma and of course you die. And very often when you die, it's because of respiratory failure or heart failure.
Oh my God.
It is awful. It's not like, oh, what a peaceful way to go. It isn't. It's awful.
That's what happened with the Lindbergh maid.
Yeah.
Yeah. She drank the silver polish that had cyanide in it.
So, no, it's not a good way to go. Sometimes people who take it, their skin will turn like blue, their skin and their body fluid. You'll start to smell like almonds. I mean, almonds smell good, but really, like if you smell
yeah, but
like
it's not
almonds,
a good symptom. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're using like a Bath and Body Works almond scented lotion, you shouldn't be smelling like almonds, I guess. So the Tylenol was produced by Johnson & Johnson. And I wrote in my notes, hey, thanks for the vaccine. I got it. I'm very grateful to Johnson & Johnson. They manufacture Tylenol. And, you know, I don't like to give props to Massive Corps, but they are the model for how you do something like this. They took a really active role. And when they figured out it was Tylenol, they worked with the media. They issued mass warnings telling people to not take Tylenol. Even you could even bring it to them. And they would like replace it, but I couldn't imagine anybody would want it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, here, replace it with other Tylenol that might also be poisoned. So it was an unprecedented recall. It was more than 31 million bottles of Tylenol. It cost the company more than $100 million. It was a really big deal at the time.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And we've had a couple of other incidences. What was the one? It was like Odwalla. Remember that juice company? They had like some tainted juice that went out. Nobody does the recall like Johnson & Johnson did it back in the day. Like I said, all over the media, encouraging people not to take it. They offered a reward for anyone that would give information to figure out who did this. They did a lot. So we're not here to shit on Johnson & Johnson today. But if we do one on the opioid crisis, we will. So the police had set up a 145-member task force on this case. They were just baffled because the pills came from different production plants. They were sold in different drugstores around Chicago. Their conclusion was that someone was taking the bottles off the shelves, and because there was no tamper-proof stuff, they would just open it, put poisonous pills in there, put it right back on the shelf.
Oh my God, we were so vulnerable.
So vulnerable.
All
it's
this
so
time.
Scary.
Yeah. Because I remember capsules very well.
Me too.
You opened them up and the medicine came out. There were their little, it was Contac. Remember that? That was like a.
Yes.
My mom like used to take those for allergies. Yeah. And yeah, before they had, and it was a joke for years, not a great joke, but people would always joke about childproof capsules. I'm an adult. I could barely open this thing. It's like, that's good if you're buying.
Yeah. By the way, drugs. I still can't. I still like totally struggle opening those things, and I can't even open fucking shampoo and shit. But it's good. We need that. Like, how scary? Because whoever did this didn't give a fuck who took it. They weren't targeting a specific person or a specific group of people, or it was 100% random. Anyone could have bought this. That's really scary.
Yeah.
Do you remember when this was going on?
I do remember I had a friend at the time. Her name was Jennifer and her dad worked for Johnson & Johnson. And it was like you could not joke about this stuff because people were telling really bad jokes about Tylenol.
Yeah.
at the time, and her dad like had no sense of humor about it. It was a really big deal. But I remember when all of a sudden you had the seals for everything, and it was childproof tops and all this stuff. And like I said, people bitched about it and people complained, like, especially if you're arthritic, it's really hard to open up those things. But when you hear about what actually happened, it's like you said, they didn't have a seal even. Like, you know, usually, you know, crack open a seal and you take the cotton out. Now you're like, okay, that bottle is preserved. It was fine. It's, you know, they tampered with it. It just didn't happen before.
Mm-mm. That's what's so crazy to me. I totally remember this time. I just remember it being all over the news. My parents still, like, they still watch the local news all the time. And the lead story forever was about this, because it was really scary. And then you start to wonder, is it just Tylenol? Is it everything? Mm-hmm. And you just didn't want to take anything. It was a really crazy time. So obviously there was no internet back then to warn people. Like I said, they were all over the news, all over the newspapers, like it was all over the place. But then police actually drove around Chicago, like residential streets, and they used bullhorns to warn people. Don't take Tylenol. They were yelling it to people. Don't take Tylenol. I'm like, that's some like old.
Did they get that from
shit.
The Blues Brothers? You know, right? Like, tonight, Blues Brothers. And it's maybe ladies' night.
It's the ladies' Chicago night. Theater. Also, don't take Tylenol. In some places, they went door to door with bags, and they were like collecting people's Tylenol bottles so that they could test them. They were making announcements at schools and all over the local TV news. Tainted capsules were found in a few other grocery stores, too, in the Chicago area, but they had not been sold yet. So that is good news. So here's a rundown of a few of the suspects. Now we're going to get to the good stuff. One of the suspects was Roger Arnold. He was investigated and cleared eventually, and this is crazy, he had a nervous breakdown after all the media attention, because like I said, everyone was freaking out and everyone really wanted to know who did this and they wanted to know why, so we could all like get back to normal. There was all this media attention when he was starting to be investigated. Like I said, eventually he was cleared, but he blamed it on this man named Marty Sinclair. And Marty was a guy who worked at a bar, and I guess Roger was like, would go to this bar, had somehow mentioned that he had cyanide in his home. And so Marty was like, yeah, sure. Hey, can I get a beer? Also, I have cyanide in my home. Like, what the fuck? So Marty told the cops. I mean, he's not wrong. So they started investigating Roger. In the summer of 1983, Roger shot and killed this man named John Stanzia. It's because he thought he was Marty Sinclair. That's how much Roger hated the bar owner that turned him into the police. He killed a man who looked like him.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he was convicted of that murder. He served 15 years of a 30-year sentence for second-degree murder, and then he died in June 2008. One of the other suspects was a woman named Lori Dan. She actually poisoned and shot a number of people in 1988 in Illinois, and I think it's called Winnetka, Illinois. Sure. Winnetka? Let's say I'm right. Yeah, that sounds right. Okay. I should have just said Illinois. So she was considered a suspect, but they really could not find any connection to her. She has a really crazy story. And if I told her story, this podcast would be like 3 hours long. But I did want to tell you, there was a book written about her life, and it's called Murder of Innocence. It was turned into a made-for-television movie.
Oh my God.
And it starred Valerie Bertinelli.
Okay. Is that the one who kills the kid at the schoolyard?
Yes.
I know that one. Yeah. Oh my. It's a really good movie. It's a terrible story.
Yeah.
But
it's a fucked up story.
Yeah. She had mental health issues, obviously, and it was affecting her marriage. And then she went to a school and tried to poison these kids with their juice boxes.
Yes.
And then didn't she shoot them?
She shot a couple of people, yeah.
Oh my God.
And including one kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had a lot of problems.
Yeah, she had a lot of issues. Oh
my God. But when I saw the TV movie connection, I was like, well, I have to bring this up.
Well, I've seen it. They used to play this on Lifetime all the time.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Wow.
So I know. And then in May 2011, the FBI actually requested some DNA samples from the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski. They thought maybe he was connected, and he denied ever doing it. He said he never had any cyanide. But the first four crimes by the Unabomber happened in the Chicago area from 1978 to 1980. His parents still lived there. So there was this thought that maybe he was connected, but they got their DNA and they never found any kind of connection. But the number one suspect is this man, and he's still the number one suspect, is this man named James Lewis. And he is the main suspect mainly because at one point he claimed to be the Tylenol killer. I'm like, okay. seems like a good reason to suspect him. When all these murders first happened, he wrote a ransom letter to Johnson & Johnson, and he demanded $1 million in exchange for stopping the poisoning. He is such a fucking creep. So before the Tylenol murders, we're going to rewind it a little bit. In July 1978, he was the main suspect in a murder. And this story is kind of bananas, so bear with me here. Lewis worked as a bookkeeper in Kansas City, Missouri, and his first client was this 72-year-old retired truck driver, and his name is Raymond West. Raymond eventually was reported missing by a friend. The police went to his house, and there was a note on Raymond's door, and it's in Lewis. The note is on Lewis's business's letterhead. So that's a pretty good clue. And the notes, yeah, West is out of town. Raymond's out of town, you know, and the cops were like, oh, I guess he's out of town. Nothing suspicious here. So that worked for a little while. And then the friend complained again, and the officers went into Raymond West's home, and then they found another note, and the note was on the table. And once again, it's Lewis's letterhead from his business. And it says that Raymond West is sleeping. He's sleeping. Don't wake him. Don't wake him. That shit worked. They fucking left. They were like, oh, I'm going to see you sleeping. I don't know what is wrong with these cops. So finally, the police go back. They did a second search. This is 3 weeks later. It's a really long sleep. They go back. They found Raymond West's body in the attic. It was wrapped in sheets and garbage bags.
Oh, Jesus.
Total, and all chopped up. They started investigating. It turned out that Lewis had taken like $5,000. All of this over like $5,000 from West's bank account.
I'm sorry. Wayne's World. We've got $5,000. Yeah. We've got $5,000.
It's so stupid.
I'm sorry. That's nothing.
No. It's like, it feels like nothing. It's just, yeah. So they did a search of Lewis's home. They found a rope. They found garbage bags. And they found checkbooks. And they all belonged to the victim. So he was arrested. And he was charged with the murder. And then the charges were dropped because the judge ruled that the search of his home was illegal.
Oh, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy got away with murder. Just saying. I know you were innocent until proven guilty, but this guy got away with murder. Okay, so back to our Tylenol murders. Lewis was identified by fingerprints and the envelope used for his ransom letter for his $1 million. Whoa! Police were unable to link him to the crimes, though, because he was actually living in New York City at the time and had not been to Chicago. They couldn't prove anything. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Lewis admitted that he did write the letters. He was like, but I really want to help. And this is usually a sign of someone who also did it, by the way. They all of a sudden they want to be really helpful. He gave these plans to the police, very detailed plans on how the capsules could have been injected with lethal doses of cyanide. But Lewis has always maintained his innocence. He says that he's just trying to be a good citizen. Quote unquote, good citizen, by giving authorities detailed sketches that explain the crime. And he actually said in an interview at one point, I could tell you how Julius Caesar was killed, but that doesn't mean I was the killer.
Okay, but
yeah, right.
You weren't alive when Julius Caesar was in power. So that's kind of stupid.
Cool story, bro. So he was never convicted of this crime, but he was convicted of extortion. And he served 13 years of a 20-year sentence. And he was paroled in 1995. The Department of Justice is still investigating him as a possible suspect. They are constantly collecting new evidence. Both Lewis and his wife, which, by the way, he's married. This fucking creep is married.
Of course.
Anyway, they took DNA samples from both of them, but they still have not been able to connect it to him. The cops are still really focused on him. They still think he's the guy, and they're just trying to prove it. But then a daughter of one of the victims, so Mary Reiner, the new mom, one of her children, Michelle Rosen, she does not think Lewis is responsible, and she thinks it's an inside job. And so she has been dedicating her life to finding out who did it. And she is convinced that tampering occurred somewhere in the manufacturing. And so she is, if you Google it, she's always trying, she's trying to raise money through different, not charities, but you're trying to raise money for your project.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I know what you're thinking. Yeah. What's the fucking word?
Like a Kickstarter or something.
Thank you.
Like, yes, she's trying to do things like that to like fund. Yes, she's trying to crowdsource her investigation. I should put a link to that in the show notes and I'll do that. As a result of the Tylenol murders, there were all these copycat incidents all across the country. There were more than 270 different incidents reported of product tampering in the months following the Tylenol deaths.
Holy shit.
Yeah. There were pills tainted with everything from rat poison to hydrochloric acid. People got sick. Three more deaths in 1986 from tampered medicine. It was Excedrin. A woman died in Yonkers, New York after taking, oh no, this was Tylenol. Sorry, this was another Tylenol laced with cyanide. Excedrin was used in Washington, where a woman named Susan Snow and then a man named Bruce Nickel both died, also cyanide. But eventually they arrested Nickel's wife for it. Ta-da. Scorned wife, I think. Yeah. And then there were like copycats that expanded to like food tampering. So then there was, so all of this happened late September, early October, and then Halloween came. And this is when people start freaking out about Halloween. Some people said they kept finding like sharp pins and razor blades and candy. Yeah. And this is when some communities actually banned trick-or-treating altogether that Halloween. But this is when it became a common thing for parents to start inspecting your candy for tampering.
And we knew they were doing that just to be able to get their hands on the goddamn candy. I never bought that.
By the way, my dad went 100% was like, I need to look at your candy. And then he'd take all the sugar daddies. Like, bastard. That I also considered it the toll. It was like the toll I had to pay for being a kid and living in their house, I guess. I'm like, I guess I have to give up all my sugar daddies. So also because of these murders, Johnson & Johnson introduced these like the new like tamper-proof packaging. It had like the foil seals over everything. It made it really obvious if anyone had like tampered with it. And because they did that, those kind of protections became the industry standard. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. They also changed the caplets. That's so funny to me, the cap. I just remember the contact commercial where you could like break open.
Oh, yeah. That was the whole point.
And you would see like these little teeny balls of medicine or whatever. That's when they changed it to these gelatin, easy to swallow caplet or capsules or pills, basically. I wrote in my notes, now if we could just get Johnson & Johnson to buy some gun manufacturers, right? I'm like, because we have all these guns that are killing people, but we don't do anything about it. The following year, in 1983, the U.S. Congress passed something called the Tylenol Bill and made it a federal offense to tamper with consumer products. And in 1989, the FDA established federal guidelines for manufacturers to make all products tamper-proof. I wrote in my notes, remember when Congress actually did stuff like this? Good times.
Responded to a tragedy appropriately.
Yes, exactly. Remember when they actually wanted to protect you? I feel like now all these companies would get together and fucking hire a bunch of lobbyists and none of this would happen. That's what I feel like would happen now. But it was an easier time, the 80s. We were all high on Aquanet and on Atari 2600s, I guess.
And MTV.
And MTV. We were all distracted by the new Loverboy video. So that is our What a Creep mystery, the Tylenol murders.
Good job, Sonia.
Thank you.
So who do you think did it?
I think it's exactly who they think it is. Anyone who like comes forward with their helpful drawings, I'm like, red flag, red flag. It's probably him. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. This is all like a lot of this is new information for me. So I'm just wondering. First of all, I'm freaked out by the Valerie Bertinelli movie that you just mentioned, because that's going through my mind. There's a scene in that movie where she's wearing gloves and she shows up at the school and she poisons the kids' juice boxes.
I went down a total rabbit hole and put all the stuff about her in my notes. And I was like, that's not what this episode is about.
No, she was a very sick person, by the way.
Yeah.
She was trying to get help. I mean, she was trying. It's just,
She was diagnosed with like obsessive compulsive disorder. I think schizophrenia. She had a really fucked up marriage. There was like a whole thing but she was also like working as a babysitter for multiple people. Before she went into that school, she had made all these little boxes of treats, cookies and juice boxes and stuff. They were all laced with cyanide. But the thing is, she diluted it so much, nobody died. I think some people felt unwell. If they, you know, it was like a couple people ate it and felt unwell, but they didn't die. But then she went into the school, tried to poison people there. She tried to shoot somebody. At some point, like her and her husband were splitting up and he got stabbed with an ice pick.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed she did it, but the wound looked self-inflicted. So the cops weren't buying it. And he didn't pass a polygraph. And she said that he raped her multiple times. You know, cops didn't believe her.
Right.
Even though she passed, which is crazy to me, they gave her a polygraph test. She passed it twice. You know, because they were still kind of married at the time, they were like, well, that's not really a thing. And it's fucked up what she did, but when I was reading everything about her, I felt sorry for her.
She was very, very sick. She was schizophrenic. She had a lot of issues and she wasn't, and they didn't know how to treat her. And it was really bad. Yeah, that's a really disturbing movie.
And it's fucked up that she could even buy a gun. Mm-hmm. Like she bought a gun, you know, it's like, here's someone with this past, like, a police record for some of the things she had already done. And she was still able to buy a gun. It was fucked up.
America.
America. Fuck yeah.
Anyway. So is that guy still alive? The main
he
sister?
Is.
Oh, how old is he now?
Oh, good question. I'll look it up.
But he's alive. Let's just say that.
He is alive. I don't even think he's old.
So he's probably like in his 20s at the time.
Yes.
And it was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's like 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's still around.
He's still around. Well, good job, Sonia. You got me freaked out.
No, that's no good.
But I do remember that time. And I remember when all this was happening. And it was really scary. It was really, really scary to think anything could be tampered with.
Exactly. Because it really wasn't just Tylenol. It could have been anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The randomness of it.
Oh, my God. That's like the first Batman movie, isn't it? Now that I think about it, the first Batman movie, tampers with everything. Like,
and they can't use the beauty products.
Yeah, they can't even use cosmetics. And so like the newscaster's faces are all gross.
And they have frizzy hair.
Oh my gosh. I hadn't even thought of it until just this second. Oh my, that's crazy.
Are you ready for our non-creep this week?
Yes.
Okay, let me take a sip of water and we'll do it. We'll be right back. Virginia.
Yes.
I had to look up. I couldn't find a hero for 1982 that kind of fit. I was trying to think of like a hero of the time, and I couldn't find one. I had really good people for 81, 83, not 82. And so then I just started going, well, who's a famous person from Chicago? And there's a lot of people from Chicago.
Oh, yes.
But I landed on someone whose music I can't say I was really into in the 80s and 90s, but I started following him on Twitter. It's Richard Marx.
I love Richard Marx.
I knew you would. I was like, Sonia loves this shit. But it's good music. It's very catchy music that he created. He was born Richard Noel Marx in September 16th, 1963. He's born in Chicago. He was raised in Highland Park. He stayed there most of his adult life until he married Cynthia Rhodes from Staying Alive and Dirty Dancing.
Is an amazing dancer.
And Flashdance.
We did an episode of Dorking Out on Flashdance, and we both agreed that Cynthia Rhodes should have been the star of that movie. She's an amazing dancer and such a good actress, and she's funny as shit in that movie.
She's great, and she should be doing that more. They were married in 1989 and went on to have three sons. They were together for about 25 years. When they were living in Lake Bluff, Illinois, and I'm not from Chicago. We're going to actually meet up in Chicago, right? You're still going to come?
Yes, we are. Yeah. I can't wait.
I'm officiating my first wedding. I'm going to officiate for. It's going to be up in Chicago in September. Anyway, they got divorced, and then he married Daisy Fuentes, who was an MTV VJ.
That is so funny to me. I'm like, Two blasts from the past.
Two total blasts from the past. I would never put them together. They look great together. They look amazing. They live in Malibu now. But Richard has just an incredible career. Some of his songs are Hold On to the Night, Right Here, Wait, lots of ballads. Don't Mean
Should've
Nothing.
Should've Known Better.
Yes.
Than to Fall in Love with You. Yeah, I love Richard. I was totally into Richard Marx.
I bet you were totally into Richard Marx.
He had the best mullet.
He had incredible hair. He still does have incredible hair. He was very handsome. He's still incredibly handsome. He's also a badass on Twitter. He fights the good fight. And people, I consider him on my side. He tends to be socially progressive, democratic. People try to go after him by saying, oh, shut up, you know, just play your music and shut up. Nobody wants to hear your point of view. And that shit just doesn't work anymore. That's just not an argument. Now that we can all go on Twitter and say what the fuck we mean, it's certainly not okay to go after him. But he's on Twitter at Richard Marx. And honest to God, just start scrolling through. He is hilarious.
He's so funny.
He will fight back with people and has no problem. And the one thing people try to go after him with, like, mostly after the whole you're a celebrity shut up thing, which, like I said, that just doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. They kind of call him a has-been because he was super famous, and then he just kind of semi-retired, and he always is like, you were never was, you know, don't argue with me.
I've seen tweets where he's like, people are like, you're a has-been, you're this. And he's like, hey, like, I woke up this morning and had breakfast with Daisy Fuentes.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, fuck off. What'd you do today?
Yeah. I have my mansion in Malibu and I go on these great vacations with my spouse. He was somebody that was going to go on tour in 2020. And then the COVID virus hit. And he was one of those people that's like, no, you got to stay home. You got to keep people safe. You know, he missed his mother. His mother's still is alive. She's 84, 85 years old. And he said, I haven't seen her in forever because we all have to be safe. And like I said, people try to go after him for all kinds of things, homophobic things. He'll totally just bat you away. He just has no time and no patience for anybody's shit. I love this one story. He and Daisy were on a flight in Seoul, Korea, and a passenger got unruly and started fighting and hitting people. And the flight crew was not prepared to handle this person. So it was a few passengers, one of them Richard Marx. His wife was putting it all on Instagram, Daisy. He held the person back and had to help like tie up the person and keep him in his chair, make sure he didn't hurt people. And the guy broke loose three times and they had to keep an eye on him. And no one wants to deal with a, you know, that's the thing about flying that terrifies me. Like I'm going to Chicago. I'm going on a road trip with some friends because I'm like, I don't want to deal with planes. I don't want to deal with people.
I know. It's really scary right now on planes.
It really is. And but he recently said that, I don't know if you heard about, we're going to have these guys on our show, Rand Paul and his father, Ron Paul. They're definitely going to be episodes one day.
Are.
But Rand Paul, who's a total fucking prick.
Yeah, I hate that guy.
He had an argument with his neighbor and one of them had broken ribs. Like the cops had to be called. It was a whole fucking thing. And Richard Mark said in one of his tweets, like, one day I'm going to meet his neighbor and I'm just going to give that guy a big old hug and thank him. And of course, Rand Paul, being the fucking weenie that he is, he complained to Twitter that this guy was inciting violence against him. I'm so not even kidding. He's such a shithead. He went on the Stephen Colbert show. And do you know the song Right Here Waiting? Right here waiting for you. Rand Paul was complaining that he was a C-list celebrity encouraging violence. And so he goes, Richard Marx goes to the Late Show and they had a parody song and it was Right Here Waiting. And they said, it's not Richard Marx's fault that people hate Rand Paul. And he sort of retweeted that. He says, yeah, Rand Paul, I mean, he always fights back. He fights for the good fight, invites four people. He's funny as shit. Like I said, just follow him on Twitter. I know everybody thinks Twitter's a cesspool, but yeah, I don't know. He's really fun. I always appreciate when I see him in my feed. He has a show with his wife called Tequila Talk, a podcast.
Oh my gosh.
He and Daisy Fuentes, they drink tequila and then they talk about what's happening in the news. So I've got to like start listening to that. And I just really, I don't know. He's just sort of a surprise to me. He looks great. His songs are great. They stand up the test of time. And that is our not creep this week. Richard Marx.
What a good pick. I would totally go see Richard Marx.
Absolutely. He's going on. I forgot to mention he's going on tour later this fall. And he has a memoir coming out in the middle of July. If you check out his Twitter feed, you could pre-order a copy. I'm dying to know what happened with the marriage. But anyway, that's our not creep this week. Richard
Marx. That's a really good one. I remember when it had to be like 10 years ago. So Hugh Jackman came and performed in San Francisco. He was doing some stage show. It was like a music and comedy, I guess. And it was at like one of the big theaters in San Francisco. Most nights he had a mystery guest. One of the mystery guests, I just remember this one night, was Richard Marx. I remember reading about it on another site. I didn't go see the show, but Richard Marx was the mystery guest and he sang Right Here Waiting for You, but he changed the words to Right Here Waiting for Hugh.
Oh, I love it.
And I'm like such a dork, right? Because I'm like, that's amazing. I love it. And like, he just seems like a cool guy.
He does. He seems very cool. Like I said, he fights the good fight. He's on, I feel like he's on the right side of things. I just completely enjoy him and his music. So Richard Marx, you're a not creep. Congratulations, sir. That is, you're an illustrious company. Trust me.
He is. I agree. Good pick.
I was going to pick Michelle Obama, but I'm like, I think we already talked about her before. And another thing, somebody goes, oh, you're being political. So I just wanted to find someone from Chicago that's, by the way, who's very political. So in essence, I got what I wanted.
This is true.
Yeah.
It's true.
If you like the sound of our voices, and what the hell, of course you do if you stuck around this far late in the show. We co-host a show called Dorking Out, where we dork out about movies. And Sonia, what is the next movie we're going to be covering?
We are talking about The Cable Guy, which is celebrating an anniversary. What year?
25th.
Oh, that makes me feel so old. It's going to be a really fun discussion. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I just remember everyone talking about this movie back in the day. So I think it's going to be really fun.
Jim Carrey got $20 million for this movie.
That's why.
And everyone was like, is he worth it? And like nowadays, Adam Sandler gets like three times as much for Netflix movies. Yeah, no, you know, it was a big deal then. So that's going to be our next episode of Dorking Out. If you would like to reach out to us, reach out to us on all of the social medias, especially if you have suggestions for creeps and non-creeps. We love it when you use the Annie Potts gift from Ghostbusters. We got one. But if you're clever and you've got some other one, go use it instead.
Yeah,
but
we love it.
We love it. We love hearing from you guys. Once again, our email is whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. And Sonia, where can they find you?
You can find me at thesoniashow.com and The Sonia Show on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, where I'm there to ruin it for the kids. Where can people find you, Margo?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. My blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we will be back soon with a new episode. So in the meantime, you guys, continue to wear your masks if you're shopping indoors, wherever you are indoors, especially on planes, trains. Don't be an asshole. Subways, don't be an asshole.
Seriously.
Please keep your face covered.
Just be safe, y'all.
Just for a little while longer. That's all we're asking for. And don't be a creep.
Creep.
Thank you for listening to us talk about creeps. You can follow us at What a Creep Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
But don't follow us too closely.
You can email us your creepy stories at whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com.
But please keep your dick pics to yourself.